Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
I'm Amy Mark Scores. In February, when you see the fastest runners in the country take to the streets of Atlanta for the 2020 Olympic Marathon Trials, it'll be easy to assume that these women are all professional athletes, paid to train and compete. But some of these women are not pros. They're wives and mothers working full-time jobs, all while training like the elite athletes that they are. Local superstar runner Jackie Pirtle Hall is a wife, mother of two daughters, full-time teacher, and a two-time Olympic Marathon Trials qualifier. Did I mention she's the Go St. Louis Marathon record holder? We'll talk with Jackie and ask her how she does it, and maybe even glean a little inspiration for ourselves on this episode of Profiles.
Welcome to Profiles, from entertainers to athletes, political leaders to entrepreneurs. Profiles gives you an insight into what has made these unique personalities who and what they are today. Now, Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
I'm here with Jackie Pirtle Hall, two-time Olympic Marathon Trials qualifier, the Go St. Louis Marathon record holder. She's won the Illinois Marathon and has placed on the podium at such prestigious races like the Pikes Peak Marathon. She is also a wife, a mom, and a teacher. Jackie, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Amy. That was an awesome introduction, as usual. I am very happy to be here and hopefully just share some of my stories, struggles, and wisdom that has to do with life and running.
Now, when you're not running, you're a teacher in the Wentzville School District.
That's right. Yes, at Liberty High School. Again, just so grateful and blessed to be part of that staff. Really just an awesome school, great principal, great teachers. Students are amazing. Life is good in the career aspect.
What are you teaching at Liberty right now?
Next year, I'm actually pivoting, and I'm going to be teaching in the PE and health department, which is a true passion of mine. Obviously, with running, my brother having his gym emerge, my mom a personal trainer, just it's in my blood to want to discover avenues of health and well-being, the pursuit of happiness and joy through exercise and eating well and good decision making. And I think I can really impart that on my students. I'm so excited about next school year with this opportunity.
Makes all the difference in the world having a teacher so passionate about
yes.
the subject he or she is teaching.
Yeah. So I taught English for 13 years and I absolutely love reading and writing. I think there's so much to be taken from classic literature to teach us who we are, what we want, lessons in life. I'm very passionate about reading literature and writing and communication, but I've always just had this gnawing desire to learn more about the human body, the brain, and just overall well-being and enjoyment of life. I'm constantly wanting to learn more about it and then share. We'll see. Next year, I get to meet my babies in about 2 weeks, and you know, that's special.
I love that you are involved in both literature and fitness, because running and thinking go hand in hand. And there is that almost existential awareness at all times for runners. Maybe it's the pain, maybe it's the boredom.
Yes. And, you know, even my kindergarten teacher, we laugh, my mom and brothers and sisters and I said, you know, she's a deep thinker. And I am. And my husband laughs at it as well. It's just, I do. I overthink things sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I really have to kind of put the brake on with that, you know, to just let things be how they are. And running's taught me that. Most of the lessons in life that I've learned have come from running. It's true, you know, like be in the moment. Don't extrapolate too much. And I think there's a good part of that part of me where I can look back at a situation and and say, where can I be better?
Okay, now let's head to Emerge Fitness, where you supplement your running with weight training. And through the magic of radio, we are at Emerge Fitness in St. Charles with Jackie. Jackie does a lot of training here at Emerge, and it's a big part of your road to the Olympic trials. How long is that road to get to the trials?
So you have to run a certain time qualification, so under 2 hours and 46 minutes. I got my qualifier last spring, two springs ago actually, at Go St. Louis, and I ran a 2:41. So and it felt really good, really nice, and I think I can attribute that to a lot of the strength training and the cross training that I augment my regular road running with here at Emerge.
And the Olympic trials are every 4 years, like the Olympics.
Yes.
So you have women and men for the men's trials training and racing over a course of 4 years to get to this one race.
That's right. So you have 4 years to the next one, but you have about 2 years to actually qualify. So there's a window of qualification. And then they stop that window, I think, about 30 days before the actual race. So last time in 2012 when I qualified, I literally qualified a little over a month before the trials. So, and I had been trying for a couple years. So it was a very emotionally charged, joyful moment for my mom and I, because mom goes with me a lot to these races and she's really vested in my running career and it's fun. So
how many women qualify for the Olympic trials?
In 2012, it wasn't as many, so I would say under 200.
And that's from the whole country, women from the whole country.
That's right. And then this time around, a lot more women are qualifying, which is really neat. It just kind of shows that our sport really is advancing with women and just in marathon running in general. I guess this year about 300, and I don't know how many will show up. It just depends, but certainly more than last time. But if you can really think about a field that's under 300, it is so small when you line up compared to like when I ran Disney, and there's just an ungodly amount of runners. I don't even know exactly the number from Disney, but it takes forever just to get to the starting line because people are just on top of each other. This race is so small, personal. It is the coolest experience.
Yeah, 300 is not very many when you look at all the runners in the country. And then as you mentioned, the Disney marathons, or you think of the Chicago marathon that has, 40,000 runners? This race has 300.
Yes.
Microscopic.
Yes, and it's all my, running idols and the people that I read about. You know, I'm a running nerd. Like, I read up on, if you go to my house, I have, like, every training book. Like, I love this stuff. I love to read about the history of women's running, just all the great runners, what they've done, how they've all gotten to these great points with different training, different ways of training. So it's just fascinating to me in that I get to line up with these really strong women.
You can hear the music pumping in the background. We're at Emerge Fitness. What's the significance of Emerge for you? How did you pick this gym?
So my brother and his wife, Matt and Angie Pirtle, opened Emerge years back, and I have been a client along with my husband ever since. I've trained here at least twice a week. My trainer, Kaylin, she invests so much time and passion and energy into her clients. She's a runner herself, so she knows how I think. Sometimes she'll give me extra stuff to do, or if she wants me to modify something, and she calls it the Jackie special. So she knows how to individualize training for me and knows what I'm doing competitively to get me to my goals. But yeah, strength training is so important, you know, for injury prevention. Every time that I get injured, it's because I fall off, I think, of my strength training. And that's exactly what happens. I start running too much, and it gets too much focus on that and not enough of that variety in my fitness program. Things like yoga and, again, strength training and stretching. And sometimes I feel like when I'm bad and don't stretch the way I should, when I get into the gym, there's that stretch element when I am getting into the different strength positions and such.
You run so many miles out on the roads, out on the trails, and running is a sport of repetition. You're doing the same motion over and over again. So you head to the gym for strength training. At the same time, as a runner, you want to stay lean and light and flexible and quick. So you're not doing the exact same workouts that a bodybuilder would do.
Right, for sure. And I think that's a huge misconception that like women are going to bulk up. It would take a lot of effort for a woman to bulk up. You're not going to bulk up even if you do lift heavy on some days. And in fact, Kaylin has me lifting heavy sometimes with shorter reps, and it just builds strength and endurance, really. So not everything is, you know, those higher reps, smaller weight. Sometimes I really push myself and she'll look at me, I'll pick up weights and she'll look at me and go, no, go put those back and pick up the heavier ones. And so she pushes me and I think that helps me get stronger, not bulkier, but just strength.
When you go to the gym, then you go after a run, and then how long do you spend in the gym?
So I go after. I can't do it the other way because then my gait, my stride is kind of messed up. I've done some reading that actual human growth hormone is produced in your body if you back up a run with a strength training session. So in my mind, that's happening. So I think if I'm having a hard time getting motivated, I'll think, wow, this is that extra, you know, little push there in my fitness. And then if anything suffers because of me being tired, I think because running is my main goal, that it's the strength. Maybe I won't have as much energy during the strength session, but the run is my primary goal. I want to be a good runner. So it always happens after the run.
So I'm going to let you finish up your workout now, and then we'll head back to the studio.
All right. Sounds awesome.
We'll have more with Jackie Pirtle Hall after this.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Amy Mark scores back with you. We've got Jackie Pirtle Hall, two-time Olympic marathon trials qualifier. Jackie, you mentioned you had fitness in your blood. Did you come out of the womb running?
Pretty much. I was a very active child. I wanted to try every sport, and not only try it, I wanted to be the best at it. So I hopped around a little bit until I found running. I did dance, I did gymnastics, I did volleyball, I did basketball, I did softball, I did soccer, I did karate, I did ice skating. I was pretty good at basketball because I was fast and I got to the basket, and also dad paid me quarters every time I made a basket. So I was a ball hog, so to say. But
so you have been a professional athlete then.
Oh,
you've been paid
goodness,
to play.
Right? Oh, yeah. Dad bribed me all the time. Thanks, Dad. But he also taught me to be aggressive and to get in there and play. And that was sort of an outlet for me and just who I am and my personality to just get that innate aggression out on the field. So I also, it seemed like I was an athlete who wanted to take charge and take control myself. And so, you know, whether this is looked at good or bad, I give me the ball, let me take care of it kind of a person.
Yeah.
And so when I found running, that was good for me, because I was in control of the push and the pain and the, well, you say pain, the suffering that goes with sports sometimes in those moments. I didn't have to rely on anybody else but me.
And this was 25, 30 years ago when girls weren't necessarily told to be aggressive and be driven and take the ball, as you put it. Did you find that you were an anomaly among your peers?
Yeah, that is such an insightful you know, comment right there. I never really looked at it that way, but definitely. Like, yeah. I am such a type A person who likes a plan, and I like to execute, and I like to see how I deal with the challenge along the way of that plan. And I'm going to get to the end, whether the end's what I want or not. But I thrive off of that. You know, in high school, that's my life was running, my running friends, and I just got so much joy and confidence, you know, being a young girl, trying to figure out my identity. Running really provided me with that confidence and that identity. It made me feel solid in who I was. And I think that was really important part of my development.
How old were you when you started running?
You know, I saw the St. Charles Cyclones practicing up at Francis Howell North, the high school, in the summer. And I just begged my mom. Mm-hmm. And it was, like I said, after about 20 other sports I tried. And I'm sure they dished out tons of money for me to do all these different sports. And they were like, oh, really? We're going to do this. And so they were at a point where they were like, we're done. Let's just stick with something. But there was something in them that, you know, saw maybe in my eyes that I really wanted to try this thing. So I was in fifth, sixth grade. I instantly loved it. The funny thing is, I was not good. I was terrible. First of all, I will run into my coach from back when, and he, first thing he does is just look at me and cock his head to the side and laugh. Because he says, I cannot believe you are the one.
Of all the potential runners, yes. You were the runt of the litter?
Yes. In my first cross-country race at McNair Park, it was like a two-mile race. Uh-huh. And I like threw up, fell down, which I called passed out. I don't even know if I really passed out. It was probably very dramatic.
Yeah.
Got up, went the wrong way. Everyone's telling me to go the other way. And I finished the race. So that's, again, that's the definition of me. I'm still finishing. But it was very dramatic. And I don't know what place I got. But
was that high school?
No, this was sixth grade.
Okay, that was still sixth grade.
My very first cross-country meet.
Oh, how funny.
Uh-huh.
And you have no idea where you finished because you were going the wrong way at one point.
All I remember from that experience was that I threw up on myself and fell down. And then went the wrong way, and people were going, go the other way.
So you're the kid that everyone is looking at going, she'll never make it. This sport is not for her.
No, and I wasn't built like a runner, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother topic that we could talk about, you know, later, about how body size and body image don't mean a thing.
Yeah.
In high school, I didn't let that get to me either. I was considered a stockier, stronger runner compared to the other little girls who were doing really well in running. I stuck with it. So the next track season, I made the 4x8 team, and I was the second position. And anybody who knows anything about relay teams knows that the second one is always the weakest one.
So where you hide the weak link.
Yes, yes. But I was so proud to be on that team, still in contact with those girls today. But there was something still in me that I would look around, and it wasn't anything like I wanted to be, you know, wanted other people not to be good. But I felt that I had more potential. I had more in me. You know, when I got to high school, my very first cross-country race was sophomore year because I played volleyball my freshman year. And then sophomore year, I did both. I ran my first cross-country race, and I beat everybody by over a minute. Even the girls who were on my 4x8 team.
Wow. So much different than your first experience in sixth grade.
It just turned around.
Parents who have kids who are maybe struggling in a certain sport, don't write them off too quickly.
No, no. And I think it goes back to, you know, all those, we talk about this in education with Angela Duckworth, her book on grit. And I think I just had that in me. I didn't know what it was, but grit and growth mindset, where I might not have been good, but I didn't look at that as, oh, I'm not good, I'm done. I looked at that as, I'm not good yet.
Hmm.
And I just kept showing up. Like, mom and I would go to the track, and I didn't know what I was doing. I would do stadium stairs and then do a lap around the track. I don't know. But I was conditioning and just showing up every season, and then all of a sudden, winning.
And you're running for state championships in high school?
Yeah.
And then in college, you ran NCAA.
And I had a tough time with that. I had a tough time because I was always winning and getting a lot of attention in high school. And then it turned to, when I got to school, I wasn't rooming with another athlete. I was put with a junior, and she was very opposite from me. I walked in, and she had posters on the wall that were Marilyn Manson on a toilet.
Oh, my goodness.
Feces all over the wall.
Oh, my goodness.
This sounds like a nightmare. That was the first thing I saw. It's like my mind just remembers that.
Oh.
And there was nothing wrong with that. She had sort of the gothic style, and she smoked, worked and she was obviously not fit, and that's fine. I'm not judging, but that was my experience coming into an NCAA as an NCAA full scholarship athlete with my pastel colored comforter and my brand new lamp that had, little flower decorations on it, and just my happiness swagger that I had. And she just looked at me and was like, oh my God. So I would have to wake up at 5 a.m. to go to practice, and she would, still be up smoking a cigarette out the window,
Yeah.
And so these were the stressors that I was dealing with at 18 years old, and I got hurt.
We've got more with Jackie Pirtle Hall next.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Amy Markscores back with you, along with two-time Olympic Marathon Trials qualifier Jackie Pirtle Hall. Jackie, so often with elite athletes, I picture this nice, clean, linear progression of improvement in the sport. But that's not always how it works.
Right. Had some stressors. I was a baby, the baby of my family, and a homebody. And so I do believe, hindsight, that I chose the wrong college, the wrong situation. The coaches were great. My teammates were wonderful. The school was great, but it was too big for me.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that I would have thrived a little bit better at a smaller college. I run better out of joy than out of pressure situations.
Yeah.
There's some athletes who are athletes who really love and thrive that pressure. I can deal with the pressure. I've learned just through training my mind and positive thoughts and things like that. And there is an adrenaline rush with, facing pressure and accomplishing what you wanted to under pressure. But that wasn't how I performed my best. So I came back to Lindenwood and ran for Coach Kerry Eldridge, who today is a colleague of mine, athletic director at Liberty High School, and we still run together.
Really?
At least once a week before work, we'll meet at 4 or 5 o'clock in the parking lot of Liberty. He really had a strong impact on my life. That's also where I met one of my best friends, dearest friends, Lisa Carey. And she's the one who co-founded Run of Babes Elite. With me, we did that together, and that started a wonderful support system that you had mentioned for me, and really helped open up my career, my drive and motivation for continuing my running career like never before. It was almost like I started my running career after college, really.
Really? So you were at Mizzou, you transferred to Lindenwood,
yes.
Run for Lindenwood. Mm-hmm. That's where you met some of your friends who are now lifelong friends.
Yes.
Did you immediately continue running after college? Was there a break? Was there a burnout period?
There was a break. There was a burnout period. I didn't want to have anything to do with running for about a year or two. But I hit rock bottom emotionally. Like, I need that structure in my life. It's part of who I am. I may not always train for road marathons because, like any elite athlete will tell you, Ryan Hall, Shalane Flanagan, any of them will tell you, Dina Castor, that's not a sustainable type of training.
Because, the amount of intensity.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is so hard on the body to train to a point where you are running as fast as you can for 26 miles. It's not just, how fast can I run? It's, I am running to the red line. Mm-hmm. If I go over 3 seconds per mile too fast early on, then I'm going to have nothing in the end. I mean, it is a science of pacing.
And the training workload is so heavy. It's why a lot of elite marathoners will have one marathon a year, maybe two.
Yes. And so, that's what I'm most proud of. And I tell my husband that I consider myself a humble person, but I think it's important for me to say, like, I am very proud that I have persevered for this long with training at this level. And I will tell you that the pendulum swings very far for me. And that's how I have been able to sustain this career this long. And what I mean by the pendulum swinging is, I've got my runababes friends who all run at different paces. They've three of them just had new babies. I still run with them. So
a much slower pace.
Yeah. And so I take time to say, this is the most important thing. The most important thing to me is to see Jessica and Courtney and Amy, who runs much faster sometimes than I do. I get nervous before I meet her if I'm in a period of running slower.
Not true.
Lisa, and just enjoy being with, you know, my best friends. And I get so much fulfillment and joy from that. And then all of a sudden, something will spark and I'll just be like, I'm ready to train again.
How did you decide to run your first marathon? And were you fast even as a rookie?
Right. So it wasn't fast. I had kind of gotten out of just a lull in my social life, just wasn't making the best decisions. Mm-hmm. After I got out of college, I was a little lost for a year or two. I found through running that that could give me the structure that I needed emotionally, physically, to get back to joy in life and to making good decisions that were apropos for the goals and success that I wanted in life. I met my husband. He is such a rock. He is my absolute soulmate, best friend. I almost tear up about it because he makes me want to be a better person. And in fact, he was running at that time. I met him through coaching cross country at McClure North. We coached together. But he's one of those people who can just like go run a half marathon without training at all. It's weird. He probably would have been an amazing runner if he would have, you know, taken it up at a younger age. But we started running together just for life. We were training for life. And I signed up for the Memphis half marathon, and we were on our way down. I was reading Joan Samuelson's book, and I said, I think I can do a marathon tomorrow.
On the way down?
Yes.
We were going to do a half and decide, I'm going to do the full.
Yeah. So I asked my husband, can you help me switch from the half to the full? Because he's a details guy. He takes care of a lot of little details for our family. And so I, you know, can you help me? Can you talk to the...
Yeah.
He said, yeah, let's do it. Let's get it done. I just did what Joan Samuelson said in her book, which is to just not push too much, to take water a lot. I think I ate some goose and I finished in 3:16. It was awesome.
Amazing. And totally not normal, which I
love. Yeah.
We'll be right back with Jackie Pirtle Hall, 2-time Olympic marathon trials qualifier.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Back with 2-time Olympic marathon trials qualifier Jackie Pirtle Hall. I'm Amy Markscores. Jackie, you trained for and ran the 2012 Olympic marathon trials in Houston?
Yes.
In Houston. While you were teaching full-time and the mother to two young girls, how in the world did you fit your training into your schedule?
Okay, so for 2012, very meticulous, very planned, which that's the type of person that I am. I get a sense of accomplishment from, you know, putting a plan together and then like executing it. So this is right up my alley. But I would on Sundays just write out where I needed to be and what time, talk to my husband about it so that my parents, they're a huge part of my support system, so that I knew that my babies were taken care of and that I could avoid impeding on my family as much as possible.
Yeah.
Because my first priority is my family. It's not running, you know, so running has to come second. So that meant that I was waking up sometimes before 4 in the morning, getting on my treadmill in the basement, pounding out the miles, taking a quick shower, throwing the hair up in a bun, and walking out the door to get to school before 7 a.m. You know, being a high school teacher, that's just one of parts of the job, you know, is starting early. I get done early. And a lot of people would ask, well, why don't you just run after school? You know, and I say it with that tone because, well, why don't you? Well, being a first-time mommy, all I thought about all day was getting to my baby.
Yeah.
Like, I just wanted so bad to be with Sam, and same with Gwen. They just rely on you so much. They're a little older now, 10 and 6, and still, you know, just my entire focus. And I know same I am with them, but it's different when they're babies like that. You know, they're waiting to see their mama after work. Not only that, but I'm tired after a full day teaching. Mentally, I am drained. I love my job, but it is energetic. I'm not a teacher that sits behind my desk and doesn't communicate with students. Their sadness is my sadness. Their joy is my joy. Sometimes emotional energy takes more of a toll, mental energy, than running a marathon. Sometimes I'll say, I had to teach a lesson today for 6 hours, and that was more exhausting than running a marathon. You know, I'll get home and be a zombie. So I have to do it in the morning. That's when I'm best.
And how many miles a week are you running, or the range? I'm sure it changes week to week.
So when I'm when that pendulum is swung to intense training, it's 80 to 90 miles.
Wow.
But to put that into perspective, an elite woman marathoner will run 120 to 140.
But those are usually the women who are doing that for a living.
For a living. They take naps. And I'll tell you one thing. It's so funny. I tried to skirt the nap the last, I guess, what do you say, like 4 years or so. I gave that up because there was just so much on my plate. And I thought, I don't need to nap. And it got to a point where I just really burnt out. And I had to take a step back and say, if you are going to put your body through this, then you have got to rest.
So 120, 140 miles a week for the professional athletes, to put it in perspective, is basically 20 miles a day at the top level.
Right.
With you, you were running near 100 miles a week while working a full-time job.
Yes.
But some runs are slow runs. Some runs are fast runs. It's not just that you go out every day and run as fast as you can.
No, no. That would definitely not be apropos to a PR. Okay. So what I look at is two runs during the week that I say these are the most important runs. Coach will sometimes put in a focus run and say, okay, these three are the most important. And so I wrap my mind around that, saying, okay, I'm going to give my most effort and energy to those runs, and whatever I have left as far as the other runs is that's what I'll give that. Mm-hmm. I won't push on those runs because I won't be able to be my best on those big runs. So if on a Monday I have a hard run, then on Sunday, I might be thinking, I'm not going to go fast today because I want to make sure tomorrow I can knock that workout out of the ballpark, because that's where I'm going to get the most growth. I'm not going to grow from being kind of fast every day. No, that's not a catalyst. A catalyst is you're going to, you know, do this hard thing on Tuesday. That's where the growth is going to occur. And then you're going to do everything you can do to recover in the meantime.
How do you stay motivated to wake up that early and to push your body during a workout?
I'm telling you, like, the feeling that I get after a hard workout is like nothing. Like, before a workout, I'll think, oh, I don't want to do this. You know, like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to put in the effort in. I'll start doubting myself, and I immediately have to say, no, you know, switch those limiting beliefs, the positive beliefs, let intuition kick in. We all have got that. Start that workout. I start hammering. Those endorphins start coming. And the rest of my day, I feel like I can do anything. Mm. After I've done that, I can do anything. And then it just fuels the next workout. Wow, if I did that and I didn't think I could, what can I do next time? Like, I always know there's more potential to unlock. And even if it's not physical potential, because I am getting a little bit older in my sport, and I am going to have to transition, even if it's not physical potential, I'm going to learn more about my mind, the strength of my mind. There's more positivity to be learned. That's what I'm chasing. That's my objective, is like, how can I be a better human being in person and unlock my potential?
Now, you mentioned earlier in our conversation the intensity of training like an elite athlete, as an elite athlete, and really how it's unsustainable to train at that intensity for your entire life. You're 37 years old, and you are training for the 2020 Olympic Marathon Trials. Do you think this is your last trials, or how long do you see yourself competing at this elite level on a national scale?
So I will tell you that I have had that conversation with myself several times the past few years. And so when I said that I qualified on accident, I definitely trained very hard for that marathon, but that wasn't the goal of that marathon. So when I qualified, another opportunity that I really wasn't planning on reared its head. And I was at that point thinking about transitioning to the trails. I was kind of just done with the roads. But, you know, God put that situation in my life for a reason. And I made a decision, looked myself in the mirror and said, either you're doing this all the way relentlessly or you're not. And I am. I'm going to go towards this marathon in the healthiest way, but also I'm going to train the best that I can to reach this goal and do the best at the trials that I can. After, I'm thinking, and I don't want to extrapolate too much because my mind might change, but I'm thinking that I'll probably pivot to something else. But I love exhausting myself, and I love the physical exhaustion of exercise and that pursuit of a goal. So I'll be doing something. It just might not be the road marathon.
Right. Redirecting that energy, that it still gives you that outlet without the mental strain.
Yes. Yeah.
Awesome. 2020, February, Atlanta, the Olympic trials, the fastest female runners in the country. Jackie, we wish you all the luck and happy training.
Thank you so much. I can't wait.
We'll be cheering you on in February. That's Jackie Pirtle Hall.
You've been listening to Profiles. If you missed any of this episode or want to hear other profiles, go to KMOX.com and click On Demand.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.